This is Alan Scott, and he was the pastor of The Dwelling Place in Anaheim, California, which you probably know better as The Vineyard in Anaheim, California, the mothership of the whole vineyard movement. He and his wife unexpectedly left the church amid allegations of misconduct, surprise, surprise, narcissism, surprise, surprise, and spiritual abuse, surprise, surprise. Let's talk about how this breaks the church and how to fix it. This is Church is Lame.
I, for one, Scott, am shocked and appalled and, above all, surprised.
Right? Like, who would have ever seen this coming from people who get put in positions of power with no oversight?
The pastor of a megachurch. It just seems like one of those things that should be a completely stable position with no narcissists whatsoever.
Ever, right? Yeah. All right, so let me just quickly take you through the details so that we can get our rage machine going, okay?
All right.
Alan Scott and his wife took over Vineyard Anaheim, once again, the mothership of the Vineyard movement, so way long ago in the decade of our Lord, 2018. And within 4 years, in 2022, he led the charge to disaffiliate from the Vineyard with little to no explanation other than you got to trust in God. Now that all of this hullabaloo has started, church members have speculated that really this was just kind of a thinly veiled attempt to take control of $62 million in church assets, right? And so the Vineyard wouldn't have control of it. The denomination would control those millions of dollars of assets. Others have asserted that Scott was responding to moves by the Vineyard denomination for more oversight and accountability. Ooh. Do we ever talk about oversight and accountability?
Not once that I can recall.
After that conversation happened, pretty quickly there was an announcement that Scott and his wife were out of there.
Oof.
Whenever denominations or churches split, there's always turmoil, right? There's somebody who wants to split, and then there's a very devoted crowd, devoted to the denomination, devoted to the family, who says, over my dead body. And so it was the turmoil of the splitting process that really caused not only the current members of the Vineyard Church to speak out, but former members and former staff members of places where the Scots worked, where they spoke out and said, yeah, this is the guy we know, and we're not at all surprised.
Yeah, and like that's not encouraging that, you know, that they're saying like we weren't surprised by this. Like, you should be surprised.
The phone call, like, hey, we're just going to check the references of Pastor Scott. Like, where were the people then? Like, oh, no, like, you should run away from him as fast as humanly possible because he's a disaster waiting to happen.
The first red light is that he has two first names. But then the second one, you know, like, John Wayne Gacy. Come on, like, we all know, like, you're a murderer. Yes. We know that.
That's exactly.
You separate from the, you know, the mega church mothership denomination, whatever we're calling it. Like the phrase with little explanation is deeply off-putting to me.
Right.
Like you should have a very clear idea why you're separating from that parent organization.
Let's take a break. And after we come back from the break, we will talk about in all of our rage-induced beauty, how this breaks the church. So I think we actually put the cart before the horse and we started like going down the road of how this breaks things before we took the break. So,
well, you know, we're excited.
We are, because there's no shortage of details to get enraged about in this particular story. There's like now a trend among the pajama Hadeen, the social media elites, the trend makers. They talk about red flags in dating. What's your red flag? What is something that somebody exhibits that lets you know immediately there should not be a date number two, right?
And yeah, so obvious psychopathy is, I think, a red flag. Yeah,
exactly right. And I think this story in particular is full of red flag kind of details. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to quickly go down the red flag details and then we can kind of go into whatever we're going to go into. Okay.
Okay. Flag me.
Scott would claim that those who disagreed with his decisions lacked faith. Scott would claim to know people's sins before meeting them. That's a little weird.
Yeah.
Scott would claim that he would appear in people's dreams and that his appearance represented the voice and the will of God. That's not weird.
No.
Right. So all these allegations come across, and an independent investigation reveals, quote, there's convincing evidence of manipulation, narcissistic behavior, and spiritual abuse. I don't know about you, but I've heard that phrase a couple too many times in the last decade now. It's become all too familiar.
In my sermon on Sunday, I was talking about idolatry, kind of coming at through the last chapter of the book of Joshua, and saying like modern idolatry is not the same as ancient idolatry. And like the example I gave of a modern idol is a narcissistic pastor. And the pastor like creates the idol that they themselves worship and demand other people worship. And one of the examples I gave of a thing that like, you know, people will use to justify like what the pastor does, or as the pastor's excuse, is you lack faith. Boom, right there. Like that kind of punched me in the face. It's like, because these people are good people. Like, you know, they want to have a church body to be part of. It's important to our faith life. And like, this is the kind of person that weaponizes that good thing against these people. And it just, it makes me sick.
But the Bible tells us in a couple different places that everybody has their Moses moment at the burning bush where their purpose is revealed to them, right? And that's a very specific, beautiful occurrence in everybody's life. But just because you've been given a vision of your purpose, we interact in a church body. And the Bible gives us some pretty clear pictures that we act in unity and we act in harmony. We act in agreement. And we know that God is moving when it's not just one person working against the flow, but it's everybody in agreement together saying, yes, this is the direction that we are going to corporately row in together.
And I would say like the Bible Project, which is another YouTube channel, like they have a recent video talking about like kind of like the corporate work that we have as a church, and just kind of how we have that corporate identity as believers. And like, if somebody wants to take that corporate leadership away, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say like, you're a pastor, you're in charge of, you know, keeping track of, you know, what's being taught and people's spiritual lives. It's another thing for that pastor to exert undue leadership and control and command.
I always talk about functional versus dysfunctional. I've seen this at its most functional when a pastor will get before leadership or get before the congregation and say, I have a vision. In particular, like I think of things like Willow Creek, the megachurch Willow Creek, where Bill Hybels, you know, gets up and says, you know, seeker sensitive. We are not going to go into the many, many interpretations of Revelation, right? That's not where we're going to go deep into the weeds. We are going to stay at a place where anybody who walks in the door will feel comfortable sitting down and celebrating with us for an hour. And then the congregation either decides, yeah, we're in here. Let's build a cafeteria. Let's build a big game room. Let's build a workout gym. And they all agree together to row in the same direction. But yeah, just the idea of somebody who has the ability, not only the vision, but the ability to go against the wishes of all leadership in the congregation with little accountability. In the words of, I think it's Damon Wayans, homie, don't play that. Okay. So 10 points to the listener, the first viewer or listener who comments with what TV show that's from.
Man, you got knocked up. I'll just let you figure out the rest of that one.
Just in case you weren't convinced yet of this pastor's narcissism, one of the reports from the investigation, somebody claims that they were made to physically bow before the pastor. You know, like all of a sudden we're in Game of Thrones and we have to bend the knee. Oh, you know,
it's like, that's worthy of like a loud F-bomb just right there. If you're crazier than Greg Locke, you are completely bat guano crazy.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yep. I mean, like,
we have jumped the shark if you are crazier than Greg Locke. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, bow before me, you know, kneel before Zod. I mean, like,
right. What? It points to anybody who can identify that movie.
Claiming that he appeared in people's dreams. Well, I mean, yeah, maybe as like the monster that's chasing that, you know, your congregation around eating them.
You know, but it's not just the pastor that's broken. In this case, I think you can also make a good case that the congregation's fairly dysfunctional as well in this one detail. You have a pastor who's off the rail and he leaves. So then you have to go through a pastoral search process and and either bring in a temporary or permanent replacement, right?
Yeah.
So Janet and Neil Young are the pastors who came in to replace the Scotts. They initially offered an apology, but then said they don't agree with the report, and they stepped down. You can't make this stuff up. Like nope. Accountability, we're not having it. You know, no control of the church purse strings. We're not having it. We're out of here, people.
I don't know, for anybody who's a fan of The Office, like, I have Oscar in my head. He's like, if you don't say anything but this, I will become apoplectic. I feel like that is like how insane when your replacement pastors are like, yeah, we're gone.
Like, usually, like, there's a honeymoon period where everything is like unicorns and rainbows. Apparently not in this case. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about how to fix it. I think you and I have kind of both beaten on the main thing, and so let me just put words to it. A church that is a cult of personality is, by definition, a broken church. The cult of personality should never, ever, 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 ever revolve around a pastor or a worship leader or a visitor. The only personality that ever matters in any church that claims to be a Christian church is Jesus. It's just like when you go back to Bible quiz and you're not sure of the answer. The answer is always Jesus.
Narcissism is a system. When you have a narcissist in charge, they create an entire system around themselves.
To me, when you say systems, I think of like a construction site and how they put up scaffolding. And you can kind of see it as pastors. They kind of test the limits in one thing and they get away with it. So that, you know, that's one piece of scaffolding. And then they'll test it in a financial way, then in a theological way, then in a relational way. And all of a sudden, there is all this scaffolding of the pastor getting his way all the time with impunity. There's such a track record of it now that nobody feels the authority to actually say, no, this ain't working. This ain't it.
The machine is there and it's operating the way it was designed to operate. That pastor leaves, you put a new pastor in there, the machine's not going to be substantially different. It's like saying, well, my knife spinning machine hurts my hand. Well, what have you done to fix it? Well, I'm now running it through 120 instead of 240. It's still a knife spinning machine, you know? Right. So it's like you have to take the whole thing apart.
Broken people that are broken to this extent should not be leading the church, right?
Yeah.
But like I said, there's another side to this coin, and that is a dysfunctional congregation. So we have a congregation and a leadership team. I don't know what they call them, elders, deacons, officers. Yeah. I don't know what they call them, right? But you have this leadership team that's whose job it is to search for leadership, to vet the leadership, to put them before the congregation and sell them to the congregation. And so now we have this leadership in this congregation who are broken because they don't know a dysfunctional leader when they see it.
Right. And that's just tragic.
Tragic and deeply disturbing. I keep coming back to this. I'm a broken record. We're supposed to be disciples. And that means we're supposed to be discerning. Right. And not everybody's discerning at the same level. Right. So if you are new in Christ, you're not going to have a ton of discernment. But for the people who've made their homes in these churches and who've risen to places of leadership, you know, these are the people that we trust to like have the really sensitive radar tracking and laser tracking and can instantly hone in on, like I said, those red flag kind of issues.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a big portion of that is probably just has come from the pulpit in the first place where it's like, they're like, hey, jump into our pool, but you're jumping into a pool in which you are in no danger of getting your ankles wet. Yeah. Just the teaching from the pulpit is overly shallow. Is all I'm just trying to say.
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs people should not be allowed at the top spot, right?
No.
Congregations need to up their game when it comes to discerning who are the good leaders and the bad leaders. But I guess if like you could boil this down to one point, it's that no pastor should ever, 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 ever be allowed to make unilateral decisions. Devoid of the support of the staff, the elders, and the congregations. And pastors everywhere will chaff at this. And I remember this at every church I've ever been to. When members of the church start questioning the way money is spent, And every pastor everywhere will go, like your job is to tithe and our jobs are to be responsible stewards. It's like, well, yeah, but who's supposed to hold you responsible? It's the congregation. No pastor anywhere ever should ever be allowed to make unilateral decisions ever.
Oh, no. And just to kind of like, you know, paint that into a practical picture, you know, like at my church, you know, our setup, you know, the pastor is a member of the leadership team. Mm-hmm. But the pastor cannot act unilaterally. There's the rest of the leadership team that needs to be dealt with in that situation. And then there's the finance team, which like they are going to make decisions about finances and whether or not like the leadership team can execute. So it's like there has to be a lot of general agreement, you know. And then we also have a pastoral relations committee, which is deals with making sure the pastor's in a healthy place, that they are in they're interacting with the congregation in a good way and in a healthy way, and it's a two-way healthy relationship. So it's like that is, you know, what my church at least does to try to, you know, live out what you're seeing here.
Last week we had a pastor who was so isolated and unhealthy that they took their own life. This week we have a pastor who is so isolated and dysfunctional and unhealthy that he thinks he's king of the mountain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Both of which are able to happen because one, these pastors are able to live their lives in the shadows, devoid of any accountability, and two, because the churches don't hold themselves and their pastors into these healthy accountability, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So thanks for reminding me about that, because I did want to, I thought that was an interesting thing, that interesting dichotomy between last week and this week.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome observation.
Radical accountability, radical transparency. We are broken records about this, and mm-hmm. we will keep saying it until somebody listens or until God takes us home. You know, one or the other. We also didn't want to let this week pass without some pretty ginormous news in the world of church goings on. And mm-hmm. the Pope has announced that trans people can be baptized. And whatever your feelings about that are, it's a big piece of news, as the Pope generally speaks for all of Christendom. And there is no one's voice who rings louder in the world of Christian opinion and Christian punditry than the Pope's. And as the Pope goes, so usually goes the rest of Christendom eventually.
Might take a few years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it takes time. Like Pope John Paul, he was the second. He was pretty well liked by the normal person during his life. But you come to find out after he passed away that Catholic leadership was not too crazy about him and his liberal ideas, you know? And the same thing seems to be happening with the current Pope. And it'll be interesting to see if the mantle of the Pope is strong enough to lead the way in a church that is trying to find its way towards open arms, or mm-hmm. whether they'll shut it down the way they shut down Pope Benedict.
Yeah, I mean, somebody brought up the other day, you know, we need to try to convince the, you know, the Catholic Church to start ordaining women. You know, we need a woman pope. And I gave as a possible, you know, kind of middle ground. Maybe we start off with like RuPaul as the next pope. So it's like he's just a cross dresser, right? You know, so it's like that could kind of soften them up to the idea, maybe.
That's just an interesting concept of middle ground. Gotta say,
RuPaul's Pope race. I mean, you want to see it, I want to see it.
I absolutely would tune in for that. Okay. And lastly, you know, some weeks we have a total absence of great headlines, but this week there were just so many headlines that were too stupid not to mention, of mm-hmm. examples of church done wrong. And so anytime we have a week like this where there's just so much cool stuff to mention, we're going to mention it. So this is too stupid not to mention. First story, which is stupid and heartbreaking. A grandmother was denied a church burial until her back tithes were paid in full.
That fills my mouth with vomit.
You know, a lifelong attender of a church, lay leader, you know, found, you know, one of these, like one of these people that you just see week after week, year after year, and that you look forward to seeing in the church. Mm. And just because of a financial situation, they're going to deny her a burial in the church cemetery. Unbelievable. Next up, a defrocked Alabama priest returns to the U.S. after taking an 18-year-old girl to Italy.
I mean, 18 years old is, like, you know, legally an adult. So that makes me wonder if it's not so much that he took an 18-year-old girl, is maybe it's like he just, like, took her in a piece of luggage to Italy.
Or... Well, when you're a priest, you generally take a vow of celibacy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's that whole thing, huh?
There's that whole thing, right? I didn't read the whole story, but apparently he just, like, up and abandoned his church, his parish. You know, so
Of course,
unbelievable. And the last one, and this one's wonderful, because like the point of this show is like we're really talking to church leaders about stupid things churches do that cause people to walk away and the reasons why. There was a new Lifeway research study that asked the question, why do people change churches, right? And I think that's an interesting question. And mm-hmm. almost every church anywhere will tell you that people leave churches for shallow reasons, yeah. Right? I got mad at the preaching this week, or the music made me mad this week, or something like something shallow and stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that 60% of the responders who have moved to a new church say the reason is for no other reason than they just changed their residential home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have seen that one coming.
People move, and as a result, they move churches.
Oh, gosh. So I feel obligated at this point to bring up an honorable mention. So if anybody out there is just, if you want some real good cringe, there was an article, it was 15 tattoos of Jesus people should probably repent for.
Yeah. I will make sure to put all the links in the show notes and descriptions. Absolutely.
It's got some beauties in there.
You may have listened to this episode and thought, man, Scott and Mark, they really don't like churches and church leadership. And I just want to let you know that nothing could be further from the truth. Words is hard. We love the church. We're active in church. We want to see the church grow and be relevant and for the kingdom to be made real here on earth. But stories like this make it all too easy to understand why people are walking away from churches. So we collect those stories here as a sort of capsule for church leaders to answer the question, why are people leaving? So if you have a comment you want to add to this story, you have something to say, you agree, you disagree, by all means, head over to YouTube and leave us a comment or a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a super thanks or whatever. If you listen to us over a podcast, leave us a rating and a review. And if you're the type who likes to write and write and write and write, send us an email to churcheslanepodcast@gmail.com.
And with that, go in peace and serve the Lord.